Welcome to the Turning Points Podcast. My name is Sean, and my good friend and co-host Corinne and I are excited to be here with you. We decided to join this platform because we realized just how much we enjoy talking about the spiritual seeking process. We both love exploring the mechanisms and questions that motivate a person to begin a spiritual practice. And we look forward to interviewing experts and authors on their personal journeys, as well as individuals like us who just love discussing these topics. We are thankful you found us, so sit back and enjoy the ride. Hello, welcome to another edition of the Turning Points Podcast. Today we had a very inspiring and very inquisitive conversation with Sarah Harvey. She was extremely well-spoken, very concise, but very detailed at the same time. It was really hard. We were talking about the conversation after the podcast, and just so well-spoken and just very self-aware, very present, and it was a really enjoyable conversation.
I love Sarah. She's yet another one of my friends from the Chopra Center. I knew her for many years, and then she actually hired me at the Chopra Center. And Sarah started her career in American Airlines right after college, and then she spent many years working for Deepak Chopra. That's when I knew her. And she now has her own company called Inner Intelligence, where she coaches and trains leaders and leadership teams to access and apply their talents, systems, and resources that naturally exist within them. And she shares how she learned to do that herself. And, I just love her. So it's enjoy this conversation with our friend Sarah Harvey. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much, Corinne. So great to be here.
Yeah, and it's good to see you. We will definitely get into, I'm sure, how we know each other. And we'll begin with our question. So many seekers can recall that point in time when their childhood beliefs no longer worked for them. So do you remember when you became a seeker?
I do. And I consider myself a lifelong seeker. That's what I'm going to say. So I see this whole process of seeking as a kind of flower that unfolds over your whole life. But one of the first things that I remember was when I was 16 years old, I got my first job as a lifeguard at a psychiatric hospital. Awesome. So how's that for a good job for a teenager? So, you know, the pool was only 5 feet deep, so nobody drowned. But I did get to meet a lot of interesting people with a lot of, you know, issues in their life. And you know, I found myself reading books like Living, Loving, and Learning by Leo Buscaglia. I don't know if you remember that one. It's an oldie but a goodie. And even like The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And so I always had this kind of keen interest in the human psyche, in spirituality, in this kind of question of like, who am I and where do I fit in the universe? And so I knew like very young, even though I was raised Roman Catholic and like dyed in the wool Roman Catholic, every Sunday church, you know, everything that you could imagine that goes along with that. And I didn't have a bad experience with that. So that was a blessing. And I know many people have, but it wasn't a bad experience for me. But I just could tell over time that there were certain aspects of my spirituality that I would say almost went beyond what I was taught as a part of Catholicism. And so I think in the early days, me reading those books, because it's like, I don't know that many 16-year-olds that are reading those kind of books, but I think it was a sign, right? And I think it was a little clue from the universe that, you know, I was curious and there was more there than, you know, what I had been given by my parents is what I would say. So, you know, at this psychiatric hospital, I met a lot of people with all kinds of issues in their lives. And again, I was raised pretty traditionally and had a great life. My parents never got divorced, like, so a lot of good stuff. But I just came to realize that not everybody's living that life, you know? And so my lens kind of opened up a little bit, which, you know, opened up every aspect of myself. It opened up my heart. It opened up how I viewed other people, how I viewed myself. So I think that was like the very first early seeking that I was doing. And, you know, I practiced Catholicism all the way through 43 years old. So it didn't really go away. Even when I was working at the Chopra Center, I was still practicing Catholicism. But what I came to understand was that this unique lens on spirituality that was meaningful to me wasn't actually at odds with my faith. And so it actually expanded my faith and it made it more beautiful is what I would say. But then kind of what happened was I started kind of exploring what was going on in the Catholic Church with the priests and all this. And so I actually started doing a lot of reading on it. And I was disgusted. I was disgusted, to put it frankly. And I said, I just can't anymore. I can't belong to that club. I can't be a part of that. And so I let that aspect of my life fall away with a blessing, not with, not with my own personal wound, but more just in respect to the universal wound that has been caused by that. So I stepped away from that. And that was all actually while I was working for Deepak Chopra. And I think that was another, I'm a big believer in the fact that there's a divine plan at play and everything is going to be laid out as it should be laid out, right? So that's kind of a stress strategy for me, is just trust that everything is laying out exactly as it should. Because here I was, you know, a young woman who spent 13 years at American Airlines in like traditional corporate jobs, and then I moved to San Diego and I end up working for Deepak Chopra. Well, I didn't meditate. I didn't do yoga. Like, I'd kind of heard of Deepak. My only motive for working there was that I could ride my bike to work. And but I'm going to tell you that was my mind, right? I don't think that was the more universal mind. I think the universal mind was like, oh no, we have bigger plans for you, my friend. But of course I didn't know that at the time, right? And I just kept walking into it and walking forward. And, you know, I remember being there for the first few months thinking, wow, like, what planet is this? Where have I landed? Like, what are they even saying? Speaking Sanskrit and dosha and pranayama. I was way out of my comfort zone, way out of my comfort zone. But, you know, in my life, I've always just discovered that if you just say yes, right, and step in, see what's there, that there's always this gift, right? There's always this beautiful gift, especially in the discomfort. There's a big gift. And so really, I worked there for 13 years, right? And just had all these different positions there. And, you know, just came to realize that, like, wow, there's a whole different way of being that I had no idea about. I was completely unexposed to it. And so I'm curious, I'm a learner. And so I just kept kind of participating is what I would say. And I remember another like key moment for me was my very first yoga class at the Chopra Center. It was taught by somebody who's one of my good friends now. And the whole time tears were just streaming down my eyes. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, I wasn't sad. I wasn't feeling bad. I wasn't upset. Literally, I could not stop the tears from coming down my eyes. And so at the end of the session, I said to the teacher, I said, hey, I don't really know what's going on, but I can't stop crying. And she's like, it's because you're going home. And then I cried more because I realized that yoga was more than this exercise class. you know, that yoga was this very spiritual practice. And without even really knowing that, right, it was impacting me. And so that tells you something right there about yoga and the impact that it has on your heart, on your soul, of course, on your body, but literally on the unseen aspects of yourself. It just goes in and touches. And so that was an unconscious seeking moment that it just, again, it cracked me open. It shifted how I think. And I mean, there's so many moments like that, a lot of which I experienced through the Chopra Center, you know, partly because I was there a long time, but partly because I was just saying yes to whatever was presented to me and in front of me. So like moments of you know, meditation and just like really experiencing that stillness and that silence. Like I have been my whole life, I was like an achiever. So I was like, go, go, go. What's next? What else? What more? Go, go, go. Right? Put the trophies on the wall. Put the trophies on the wall. Like I was just like revved up into that world. And even at the Chopra Center, I was revved up into that world. But through meditation and even just mindfulness, I realized, okay, stop, Sarah, because you can keep running, you can keep achieving, you can keep getting the trophies, but wherever you go, there you are, and you're going to just continue to feel exhausted. And so that was the gift of meditation for me, was that I was like, that's not all there is. That's not all there is. That's actually not what life's about, is that go, 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 and achieve, achieve, achieve. And so like that for me, let me stay at the Chopra Center instead of running off to the next job because I needed to get the next achievement completed, you know? So that was a huge spiritual turning point in my life too. There's just so many like that. So yeah.
Well, that's an interesting one, because realizing that the spiritual process of self-reflection is more of an uncovering. It's not of gaining more of kind of experience, right? And you know, I think you go into it seeking to find something. If you're seeking, there must be a goal in mind. And as you deepen into that self-reflection, you get to whatever your version of the uncovering is, and that uncovering seems to be always, but you know, you can't, I think you hit a threshold where you can't achieve more spiritual opening. More spiritual opening happens, yeah. But it's not that, attaining something kind of a experience.
Yeah. So what a big shift, right?
Yeah,
in mentality, right. And perspective. And so instead of the striving and achieving, it's just the allowing. But yeah. Wait a minute, what do you mean allow? What does that even mean, you know? And so I think that that is a sense of freedom, is what that gives you. When you can just allow, not on your timeline, not with your agenda, but just with trust and with openness and just being, right? Just being. If you can allow that, the gifts then just come to you, as opposed to you having to go get them, yeah, or think you have to go get them. That's a big shift for me, you know? And even now, you know, sometimes I think there's things that we get to work on for our whole lives. And then there's things that we get right away, you know? So this idea of shifting out of doing into being and shifting out of achieving into allowing, I feel like it's a lifelong journey for me. You know, it's something that is karma to work through, I think. And again, don't put the pressure on that you have to check the boxes. Just know that. So that's a big thing. Another thing that was, and still is, a big opening for me is just this concept of self-awareness. So when there's a lot of things I learned from Deepak, but one of them is this idea of the witness, you know? And so we are conditioned beings and we just keep like plugging away, doing the same things, getting the same results, asking why, right? But we don't shift out of it. And so when we become our own witness, right, we're up here and we're observing ourselves in conversation, in relationship, it's the most powerful thing. You know, Deepak will say the highest form of intelligence is non-judgment. And if we can just observe ourselves a little more, and I find when I stop and just begin to like see who's doing the listening, right? And just who's actually observing this conversation, I can shift like that. I can shift so quickly out of that maybe ego place, something to prove, something to get, into that state of just being. And, you know, I've come to this point where in my life where I see self-awareness as a way of being, right? I don't see it as a title. I see it. And so when I hear people say, oh, I'm totally self-aware. Like, that's the one thing about me. I'm totally self-aware. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're the opposite of self-aware. You're in your ego, right? Yeah. Because if you're truly self-aware, you don't need to state that you're self-aware.
Yeah.
Because you just are. It's just a way of being. And that was another like, oh, right. Yeah. Okay. But I don't know. I hear that a lot from people.
That's great. You know, it's nice to hear you because we haven't really had a longer conversation than 10 or 20 minutes in probably, how old's your youngest or your oldest? 15?
18
years. So probably 20 years since we've sat down and had a conversation. And so it's, I love, you know, hearing, you know, how you're talking now and how all these things have, you know, how you've grown and gotten all this stuff. Cause there's a lot of things we heard back then that Deepak was saying that I know, I mean, I have understood it in many different ways over time, many different layers. Because he used to teach us, you know, you hear from whatever level of consciousness you're coming from. So the person can be saying whatever they're saying, but the receiver, it's like they're going to get only what they're ready to get. And so a lot of the stuff I used to hear from him, like to me, what you're describing there is like the infinite organizing power of the universe, trusting in that. Like when he first said that, like you get it at this intellectual level, and ooh, that sounds woo-woo, that sounds good, but I could never... You know, but now when you allow, you truly live that and you see that, the universe can organize things so much more. But how do you teach, like I do, you know, spiritual life coaching and stuff. And a lot of these achievers will come to me and they'll one of their biggest concerns is that when they start meditating and getting more chill, that they'll lose their edge. I'm sure you've heard this, right?
Yeah. I get all soft and I won't be able to sell like I could when I'm like hard and like on it. Yes. Yeah.
So what's your answer to that?
So one of the biggest challenges that I actually love is to be able to take all the teachings that I've been exposed to and that I've attempted to integrate on some level and to shift the language so that somebody, like I coach a lot of business leaders, that's who I coach, right? And so some of them are ready for more spiritual language, some of them aren't. So the challenge for me is how can I reword this in a way that they can actually hear me, not feel like, oh, that's all woo-woo stuff, right? They can actually hear me and they're willing to take a step in because, and that's my job is to read where they are and to know what language can I use to push in with them and what language is too much for them because they'll shut down, you know? So that's it's sort of an art and it's a dance, you know? And you kind of know quickly when you've pushed in a little too far. Yes. They're either looking at you with a deer with headlights or they're just like shaking their head, you know? So just kind of stepping in, you know, I have found that, you know, you can step in with the breath really easily. Everybody's breathing. Nobody's worried about it being against their spiritual practice. Like, let's just breathe together. You know, let's just breathe together. And that's an opener for people. Yeah. And once they start breathing and then they observe themselves, it's like, oh, wow, thanks. That was huge, right? And so that's my first go-to is to go with the breath, you know, go with the breath. So, nice. Yeah, I remember this one kind of funny story, and that was like, this was a huge in-your-face lesson for me. I was newly into my role as chief operating officer for Deepak, and we were running one of the big seminars, and I was in and out, right? So I wanted to sit in because I wanted to hear what was being said and really be actively involved. But like the phone was ringing and the emails were coming in and the text. So of course I would step out because I didn't want to disturb the room. So then I would, and then I'd run back in and I'd listen. And oh, phone again. Step back out, come back in. Well, the second time I came back in, the instructor on the stage was saying, okay, so if you're a teacher, come on up to the front. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm a perfect health teacher. I'm going to the front. So I go to the front and then all the teachers are up there. And he said, okay, so we're all going to chant the Shanti mantra. I wasn't a meditation teacher. And I was like, and I looked at the girl next to me. I was like, is this for perfect health teachers? And she's like, no. This is for meditation instructors. I was like, oh my gosh. And so I left the stage and did the walk of shame all the way down to the back of the room. And it was just like the universe, bam, punching me in the face saying, listen, you either get present with what's happening or you step out. But you're trying to be all things to all people is never going to work. It's never going to work. And like I had to have a pretty embarrassing moment in order to get that lesson. And sometimes that's how it is for me. Like whether I'm stubborn or in my ego or whatever it is, sometimes the universe has to like really knock me a hard one in order for me to get that. But that was a good life lesson. And I never have forgotten that, you know? So I really, when I'm doing something now, I'm like, okay, am I present with this? What do I need to do to get present, right? Because this, the only thing that matters is who's in front of me right now. So that was a big lesson.
I love that story. And it's such a great story for you to have with business people, because that's what they all do, is they, you know, looking at their phone when they're in a meeting or, you know, multitasking. You must hear this term because you're in the business world, but the new term now is the monotasking.
Yeah. Instead of the multitasking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I remember Deepak used to always say, multitasking is impossible. Like, it's just not, it's a fallacy, right? We can't do it. We can really only do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And if we pretend that we can do more than that, we're doing all those things poorly. That's what I've found of myself. You know, I feel, and then that's what causes me to feel overwhelmed, unfocused, you know, and so there's no gift in it. There's no win in being that multitasker. But we have to give up a little bit on our need to be all, do all, know all, and just all the ego space that comes through. We have to give up on that, you know, and I don't think it makes us strong. I think it makes us powerful. This is the deception, right, that we'll buy into, that is, if I'm meditating, if I'm practicing present moment awareness, if I'm practicing yoga, then I'm weak or I'm, you know, soft or whatever it is. It's a fallacy, right? And even if we are soft, that's a good thing.
Vulnerable, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Even for business leaders, it's a good thing. The beauty is, I think more and more today, you know, traits and behaviors like empathy and kindness and compassion are being valued much more than they were in the past, you know, and those are sort of those feminine traits, which is, it's rising now. We're in that time of you know, femininity, and we've had a lot of masculinity, and it's, we need to come back into balance with that.
Yeah. My roommate was saying the other day, she's a retired vascular surgeon. So she was in the male dominated world for a very long time. And she's like, all feminine was created was women that acted like men.
Right. That's why we were wearing pants and, you know, pants suits and traditional colors, and we're getting out of that, which I'm really glad about. And again, I don't think it's about women taking over. It's about finding the yin and the yang and rebalancing ourselves. You know, it's not, I think in like feminism in the 70s, we kind of like took it over the edge a little bit, right? Because we had something to prove and we were just coming out from behind the curtain. And now I think, again, there's still a lot of opportunity for women to rise, but I think that the perspective we need to bring to it is one of balance. And the truth is, all of us, whether we're male or female or non-binary or whatever we are, we have both yin and yang in us. We have both feminine and masculine in us. And we become good leaders when we know how to call forward the right energy, right? So in some circumstances, we need to call forward that feminine energy. Sometimes we need to call forward the masculine. And women and men can do that. It's not exclusive to the gender, you know? So I think that's an awakening that I hope we are coming into, and that everybody benefits from it. Because, you know, women were being great women, and they were also trying to be great men, as you kind of pointed out, Corinne, right? And so the men were like, who are we? What is our purpose? Where do we fit in? Right? And that's not right, right? They fit in. And so how do we become vulnerable enough where we're willing to allow any gender to express any energy in a healthy fashion?
Yeah, it seems like a reorientation of the value systems of we kind of the aggression was at the forefront. Power, strength, hard strength, not soft strength. Soft strength would be caring for somebody. You know, that's a soft strength, but it is needed. And I think it's there's this misconception that we have to do everything completely different. And like you just said, I mean, it isn't like that. Vulnerability left unchecked is just as bad as aggression left unchecked. It's when you learn how to use a moment like you had, you just tell the story of being on stage. That feeling of vulnerability is terrifying for anybody. I think in the past, men would struggle with that even more so because it would crumble their egos in such a way that they would not know how to handle that. But the strength comes from having that experience, being honest with yourself and saying, I really need to reevaluate what just happened and how I'm going through things in life. Yeah. And then adding that, you know, that's a tenderness that gives you strength in the next experience. And I think that is some of the subtle shifts that we're having is pairing those things, like you said, yin and yang, pairing those things and using those abilities, regardless of your gender. You might have those out of balance, but just to say, well, we've been having too much masculine, let's do all things feminine, that may also not be the right way to do it, but it's being present. And I think that's where a lot of this friction is coming from, is that presence. It's a shockwave, and people then have to kind of adapt to that. So
Well, we have the ability, right, to dial up or dial down a little bit or a lot. We all have that ability in us. It's not on or off. It's dial up or dial down. It's like a dimmer switch, right? You can kind of increase it or decrease it with awareness. If you have that sense of awareness about your impact and how you're showing up and how you're being received, then you know, oh, let me just take that down a little bit because I'm kind of like, people are a little bit offended by me, or okay, let me just take it down a little bit. And again, you don't have to just reject it. And, you know, we're so much in our corners these days, aren't we? Like, everybody's backed into the corners, which how are we going to bridge when we're into the corners? So just saying, like, let's bring a little bit more. It goes back to Ayurveda is what I would say, which is the life science that we learned at the Chopra Center, which is a system of balancing. Yeah, it's not a system of denial, or it's not a system of all or nothing. It's, okay, where am I out of balance? And what do I need to do to rebalance myself? So check in, I don't know. Check in. What do you need to do? Where's the point of suffering? Is it in my thoughts? Is it in my heart? Do I feel it in my gut? Like, where is that sense of suffering? Okay, so what would allow that aspect of self to feel whole again? You know? And we know that can be anything from a conversation to the food you eat, to the aromas you smell, to the daily routine you put in place. It could be anything. So I hope that, you know, there's a lot of people are in the healing arts these days. And I hope that the work that all the healing arts masters are doing is shifting who we are as humans. And you know, like you said, Sean, you can be compassionate and firm at the same time, you know? You can hold a boundary and be loving at the same time. And we're not like so comfortable with that just yet. But I think that's our next evolution. It's at least it's the opportunity for our next evolution. And I'm a believer. And so I'm, you know, harmony and positivity are two of my top strengths. And so, you know, I'm going to believe until someone tells me it's impossible to believe, which doesn't happen very often. So
no, you're right on, man. That, having boundaries and loving at the same time, I think that would be a really cool core value to see permeate a little bit more. And that, as you were talking about that, it feels like repression has been an enemy to our balance in the past. That's been one of those things where, like you said, you know, I love the dimmer switches. That's fantastic. You got to set the mood, and you know, sometimes you want it bright, sometimes you want it mellow, and that's a wonderful analogy for these character traits to come online or not. Because if you look at it just like you said, it's like, well, I either need to be loving or I have to set boundaries. Well, now what you have is walls. They're just walls that are, and over time they become more and more impenetrable by compassion, by, you know, those other, we'll call them soft strengths, but they're really actually powerful strengths, but that's just the term that, you know, is used for them. And I think that repression of certain traits, and I think a lot of it is ignorance. I think a lot of people haven't been taught, whether by, you know, family or by society, to watch how those experiences can benefit them. A vulnerable situation can benefit you if you approach it as such. And so, yeah, I think it's a good thing as people come into this presence that we have a lot of varieties of teachers, a lot of variety of healers, and that people have the opportunity to, you know, to fine tune whatever it is in the traumas that are causing some of that disconnect or that imbalance.
I think it's most important too that the teachers be what they teach, right? So this is it's a practice, right? So if I'm a leadership coach, I need a coach, right? Otherwise, I'm just putting it out. And if I don't know how it feels for me, you know, how can I relate to somebody else? So I think that's our calling, is to, like Mahatma Gandhi said, like, be the change you want to see in the world, right? It's like, it's somewhat cliche, but it's like spot on, you know? We need to be the work that we are putting out in the world. That's where authenticity resides, you know? And people are clever today. People see through someone that's not authentic. They see through somebody that's not practicing what they're teaching. And so that's, I think, our calling as healing arts masters, is to really spend as much time on healing and practicing your own state of well-being as you are in helping others do that. Because that's how we grow. And I think we have to come to the conversation as students. We have to come to the conversation as learners, and be willing to be wrong. We have to be willing to be wrong. And boy, people don't like that. Like, they want to be right. You know, so, but if you're willing to be wrong, then you're open to learning, you know, and that's something that I hope, you know, I hope that I'm an example of that. I hope that the world becomes more of an example of that, because that's it. If we're not practicing it, it's artificial, you know, it's nothing more than, you know, I'll tell you what I know.
And then it gets watered down to the people that you're teaching. You know, that's that. But that's what I learned, you know, years ago. You know, I took the yoga teacher training with Rama in La Jolla. And to me, it was 30 days, 14 hours a day, very intense yoga training. So then when it came to help do the yoga program at the Chopra Center, I was like, I can't help do that. I've only been teaching yoga for 6 years. I'm not ready to like be a Rama kind of thing. And I can't remember who said it. I think it was Joella said to me, you know, you're not everybody's ready for Rama. You know, you just have to give what, you know, you're ready for. As long as you're authentic and teaching from what you know. That's another big thing that I've really, as somebody who teaches and also learn, I love being a student too, but I really try to only share what I know.
Yeah. It's tempting, isn't it, to kind of go all over the board and quote other people and, you know, all this stuff. But that knowledge is usually like just really shallow, you know. And so it's better to, I've found in my life that it's actually better to go narrow and deep than it is to go wide and shallow. And it's tempting to go wide and shallow because there's a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting people. And so there's this tendency, whether you're in business or it's for your own life. But the people I think who really make a meaningful impact are those who stay in their lane and just go narrow and deep and because they're continuing to do the work themselves, right? And so then they can bring out more and more of that work to people. And that's enough. That's enough, you know?
Well, it's sharing your experience, you know, being able to use your experiences in the teaching. Mm-hmm. It's very disarming because in that moment you're not saying this is what you should do or this is what you could do. Mm-hmm. You're saying this is what I have done. Yeah. This is what I have experienced and this is what I've learned. There's a transmission that happens there because you know, you usually my experience is when you have those really when you have those deep breakthroughs, I often laugh when when you resonate with somebody else's deep breakthrough because you're like, oh boy, I know what that feels like. And, mm-hmm. and then you feel this shared connection in that experience because it's not, you're not painting something that's intellectual. You're sending out the experience of it's everything. It's what you've learned. It's what you've seen. It's what you've felt. It's what you've gained. It's what you've lost. It's all of those things. And then it gives an anchor point for people to share that. And that's really kind of, as you're describing, is that's the teaching process is I'm learning. So I'm teaching. I'm learning, so I'm teaching. I'm learning, so I'm teaching. And it's a trickle-down effect instead of just, I have it all. Come get what I have. And that's just, like you said, you know, very shallow and it's very wide and there's a lot of catchphrases that attract people to that. But it's, if you're not doing that deep work, man, it's...
The other thing, too, is getting over yourself. Okay, getting over yourself, right? Because I probably, as much as anybody, is like, I don't really want to look stupid. I don't really want to like fumble in my words. I don't really, right? Because what will they think about me? Will they think I'm less than right? And so I've approached a good deal of my life like that. And a friend of mine said, she said, Sarah, like nobody cares. Nobody cares. And she didn't mean that from the perspective of like, nobody cares about you, Sarah. It was like, stop placing so much self-importance on this issue. Like whether you're doing a post on social media or sharing a story, like they're over it in the next 10 minutes and they're on to the next thing, you know, or in social media in the next 10 seconds, they're on to the next thing. So let go of that need to be perfect and, you know, have everything look good. Because what people, this is kind of where I think you were going, Sean, is what people really resonate with is your imperfection. Mm. What they relate to is the struggle and the pain that you experienced because they also feel imperfect and struggle with that. They also have pain and are struggling with that. So just I feel like this is a lifelong learning for me, is that, you know, take the risk and put yourself out there vulnerably. Because if you can't relate to people, if people can't relate to you, it's just not interesting. It's just not interesting. That's the bottom line, is if I'm just lecturing at you, okay, I took a few notes, right? But when you tell me your story, and it's a story of vulnerability or pain or struggle or something very personal, like, now I'm connected to you. I'm connected to you for life. And as I go about my life and somebody else goes about their life, they're probably going to tell that story to somebody else. And so not only did I impact them, I probably impacting people that I don't even know about because of my willingness to be vulnerable. And, you know, I'm grateful to Brené Brown for bringing this subject of vulnerability to the masses and making it okay. Because I think for me in a leadership role, I was never that person who would like lead by command and demand and, you know, authoritarian and full ownership. And like, it wasn't me. And many years I felt like, sorry, you're just like, you don't have what it takes. You're like less than. You're too soft. But I kind of came to understand, and especially now, the soft traits are the ones that are like desperately needed and people are craving. So like harmony, right? That's one of my talents, is being in harmony. And when I first realized that, I was like, that's so weak. Like, I'm not telling anybody that I'm the COO and my talent is harmony. Like, ugh, yuck, you know? But it's because I misunderstood that talent theme. Harmony is the bridge that connects the disconnect. You know, harmony sees the way forward when nobody else does. And I think we need that today. I think we need that. And harmony finds common ground. And we desperately need to find common ground with each other. So I've come to deeply respect that aspect of myself, but boy, did it take a while. It took a while.
To appreciate that about yourself, to see that, because you were that, you just weren't embracing
correct
that about yourself, which I have to jump in here and attest to that and give you a little kudos, because I mean, I haven't had many bosses in my life because I have been self-employed, but you were amazing boss, like the best ever. You helped people feel comfortable and build their confidence and inclusive. And, you know, it was always a joy to come to you for questions. And I unfortunately didn't get to work for you for very long because you left to have your baby soon after you hired me. But I saw you still, even before, many years, for a good 6 years before I even started working there at the Chopra Center. I saw you do your thing there and also work your way up, as you said, in many different roles up to the COO. To in the Chopra Center because of those qualities. But it was funny, you were that, but you didn't necessarily consciously embrace that. And it was funny because I kind of did the same thing as a marketing person. I was like, ooh, marketing my whole life. And until I realized I'd been marketing myself as a musician my entire life. And I, when I got to the Chopra Center, I was actually really good at marketing because I loved that so much. Yeah. I loved it so much. I was just sharing what I knew and I was super enthusiastic about it.
Yeah. So how we translate who we are affects the impact that we're going to have. And if we're, and I was translating who I am in a negative way, kind of putting it down, right? And so that did keep me small, right? Yeah, and so when I kind of came to appreciate just who I am, and I was able to, Sean, it goes back to, you know, the kindness and the firmness, right? And I was able to take harmony and positivity and say, okay, what can I couple that with that will be more balanced, right? And so I can hold my own, but I don't have to be master and commander, right? I can do that in a way that's very human and be in dialogue with people and express kindness and connection. And sometimes say, no, we're not going to do that. And here's why, you know, and helping people understand that. So, Yeah. So I just, you know, this whole conversation around turning point, it was interesting when Corinne, when you said, okay, it's the turning point. I was like, wow, like I don't have like this super nugget of like, okay, well, here's what happened. It was so dramatic. And all of a sudden I was super spiritual. Like it's like my whole life. If I go back and I look, you know, at my 58 years, starting when I was 16, it's like walking through a door to find another door. And like, I kind of equate it to, you know, when you go to the state fair and you see that it's like either the fun house or the glass, like the glass of mirrors or the house of mirrors, right? And they're just like glass doors basically, or glass walls. And you go in and you walk in, you're like, should I go left or right? You go right, and you're like, boop, and you bonk, because it's actually a hard glass. And so you're like, oh, back up. I can go left. Okay, now I can work my way through that one and get into the next one. And then boop, again. And so you just, like, that's how I view my spiritual evolution and my turning points, is like I'm still walking through that house of mirrors or house of, you know, the glass windows. And just sometimes I still bump my nose. Sometimes I walk right through and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm into the next phase. And I hope that I'll be doing that for the rest of my life, because it's very fulfilling and it's what makes me feel joyful. And it makes, like, it gets me excited, you know, that sense of expansion and evolution and growth. You know, they say, like, if you're not growing, you're dying. And so I want to always be growing. And I think I've learned, my dad was always like, Sarah, do everything. So he was probably my achiever person. But at the same time, what's valuable about that is what the reason I've said yes to a lot of things. And that has just created opportunity after opportunity. And sometimes that yes doesn't take me where I initially thought I would go. You know, it takes me somewhere different. I can tell, when I was 5 years old, I knew point blank, without questions asked, I would be an international flight attendant. That was my career, period. I already knew that. That was it, right? And I went to high school, I went to college, I studied Spanish, I studied French, because I was getting on those international routes. Never deviated, never turned my mind. And that's what I did. I went to work for American Airlines at 22 years old, got on the international flights, amazing. But I had this gypsy in me. And so I was like, what else? What more? Went back to school, got a master's degree, went to headquarters. And like, I just see, if I go back and look at this life, like, this is how I know there's this divine plan at play, right? And when you look backward, you're like, oh, okay, I see. But if, you know, at the moment when I moved to San Diego and I applied to work at the Chopra Center, like, I had no idea what lie ahead for me, what learnings I would take in, what spiritual expansion I would experience, how my mindset around spirituality would shift again and again and again. But I'm just like so thankful that's what's happened. And I left the Chopra Center in 2018, started my own business called Intertelligence, and here I am, right? And it's like, wow, 30 years or almost 30 years of knowledge coming in, knowledge about business, knowledge about strategy, knowledge about, you know, product marketing, and then knowledge about self, about spirituality, about personal development, and then taking and blending those two and saying, I want to talk to business leaders. You know, I wanted to talk to the group between supervisor and VP, because I call them the sandwich group, because they have to manage up, down, and side to side really well. And often they're new in their job and there's a point of struggle. And like, I sat in that seat and I want them to know that if you keep working on yourself, if you keep expanding your sense of self-awareness and self-knowingness, things will flow for you and you will get it and you will keep going wherever it is that you want to go. So that's kind of what I've, that doesn't mean I haven't had pain and suffering in my life, because I have, you know, there's been some very rough moments. And that's okay too. That's okay too. Because I think we're all kind of like that, you know. We may not divulge what those rough points are, but We've all had them or are having them. And that's what's common about our humanity. And we need to be in connection about those hard moments with each other so that we can lean on each other. I think that's why we're on this planet. And the other, one other thing I wanted to say about spirituality and my perspective at 58 years old is, you know, I told you I was raised Roman Catholic, but the way that I view divinity, God, consciousness, awareness, whatever you want to call it, the way that I view it now is that from God, who is just love, don't overcomplicate it. God is just love. That's it, right? No female, male, just love. From that love, I feel like there are funnels that come down. And there's lots and lots and lots of funnels. There's funnels that are religious, like Catholicism, Christianity, Judaism, Buddhism. There's all kinds like that. There are funnels that are about nature, about the sun, about water, about the elements that exist. Because we as humans are all different. There's not one of us that's the same. So how could God ever expect us to have one funnel? I think that God understands how different we are. And he, she, it, that energy wants us to find it and breathe it in. And so all these religions are fine. Nature is great. Like whatever it is that is your relationship to something bigger and larger is perfectly fine. Because if that's what connects you to love, that's yours. That's yours to harness, live into, connect with. And so I don't subscribe to right or wrong or heaven or hell. I don't subscribe to that. I subscribe to the fact that there is a funnel for all of us to connect with divinity, to connect with love. And it's your job in this life to find that funnel. And maybe you try, like I was in the Catholicism funnel, and sometimes now I'm in the nature funnel, and other times I'm in a Buddhist funnel. And you can do that. You can switch your funnels out however you need in order to access that love, because that's really all it's about. That's all it's about. So that's my lens on it right now, and could change over time. But that feels very peaceful to me. That feels good in my heart. It feels like there's space for everyone. It feels like I'm not above you or beneath you. I'm not right and you're wrong, and vice versa. And that's, I think we are, if we're anything, we're all humans, right? Or we're all spirits in a human disguise. We're all that, right? So we're all part of that web. So I don't know. It's just a respect for differences and the fact that we all have a different DNA. And so, like, why can't we just let that be?
Yeah. Well, it's good that it feels that way. You know, we tend to project and intellectualize precisely what you said, but to come to a place where you feel it that way, and that openness and that spaciousness that you're experiencing, that's a deep root. And you say, well, what are you deeply rooted in? It's like, well, I'm deeply rooted in that space and that love and that feeling that I have. That supersedes the lens. That supersedes what you call the funnel, you know, that core experience that you've discovered. That's wonderful.
Because that's the connector between all of us,
yeah,
right? It's not that the funnel is, in some level, a divider, right? But that's because we're all different. But there is a common net that we're all already a part of, whether we recognize it or not. And so acknowledging that outside, above, below that funnel is just this net of love. And that's where we're all exactly the same.
Wow, Sarah. I mean, I'd love to talk to you for another hour, but it's such a beautiful point to end on, because And it's been so wonderful to hear you talk again. We hung out, a fair bit back in the day in the early 2000s and then gone about our lives and kind of stayed in touch through, Facebook and things. And it's just really so beautiful to hear you once again. You're the way you put things, just you're very easygoing. You're very well spoken. And I just feel your heart and it feels good to see you.
Thank you, Corinne. Thank you, Sean. And let's just acknowledge all the teachers that we've had and everybody around us has had, because they've all helped to fill up our hearts and our souls with how we view things now. And so I'm just grateful to all my teachers. I'm grateful to Deepak, Debbie Ford, Wayne Dyer, all these teachers who have come before and have impacted my heart and my soul. And I know they've impacted yours as well. So I just really want to acknowledge their contribution and the impact that they've had in the world and on me personally.
Yeah.
And continue to do so.
and will continue to do so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thankfully. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Until we meet again, soul sister, thank you so much.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Many blessings. Bye, my friends.
Thank you. It was wonderful to meet you and wonderful to talk to you. So we'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, John. Right. Thanks, Corinne.
Bye. And we're in the same or section with Sarah Harvey after a couple of, technical difficulty issues. I have had a false start. And so we're back in it. But yeah, man, I really enjoyed that conversation. She's very present with her words. She's present with her experience. I think probably the thing that stuck out to me the most was her humility in the way she kind of expressed some, a couple of stories in her life where, it really brought her to a more present mindedness. And I don't know. There's a lot of little things. I enjoyed her curiosity. She's fresh. She's very vivacious with her experience, and I appreciate that. And she speaks well about that. And she should. I mean, that's her job, and that's what she's been doing for years. But she seems to actually really enjoy life, and that's refreshing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is Sarah to me has always been like a little bit of a dichotomy, because she tells us that she was driven, that she knew what she wanted to do in high school, and she went out and she got it, and she was an achiever. But when you talk to her, as far as when I've known her, she's always been very calm, very well spoken, very level headed, very inclusive. She's just always been there. And then to hear, also to hear her spiritual journey, how that's evolved, because when I knew her back then too, she dabbled in the meditation a little because she was working there, but it took her a while to dive in. And now to have this integration from this business person to this more self-aware human, beautiful human, is sharing her journey in a very open way. I just loved it.
Yeah, she... I know what you mean. I didn't know her before this conversation, but I can tell that the way she described herself and some of the things that she described that she needed to overcome, or at least balance, some of that that drive and some of that determination to get the next thing. You don't really see that, but you wouldn't necessarily see that in somebody who has a self-inquiry journey, because there would be changes, there would be growth, there would be
more self-awareness,
right? And so if that had been something that she felt was stifling that growth or stifling that awareness, or that was dividing her attention during a period of time, it would be something that she has become aware of and stayed present with. And so that's it feels unusual that she would have that dichotomy, but it really makes sense that you would have that. And that's kind of what we're doing, is going back over somebody's spiritual journey. And you go back, in her case, 30, 40 years, you should not expect a person to be the same. And if they're doing that kind of work, you would expect that they would have very keen awareness on those things in their life, those, you know, in her case, it sounded like it was programming. It sounded like it kind of came from her dad. But what I think is a really cool point about that is, while it was maybe an imbalance that she let drive her life longer than maybe she would have liked to now, she doesn't look at that as a negative. She looks at that those character traits of that driven nature as, she's like, well, that's what made me say yes. That's what made me be open to new ideas and experiment with things. And so, though it's something that she has since let go of, she's also very appreciative of it and has a good relationship with that, you know, past nature.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good description how, when she talked about how she didn't embrace, she'd always been, you know, a leader that leads from harmony and, you mm-hmm. know, in a harmonious environment. And that was a strength, but she never looked at it as a strength. She, yeah. I guess, you know, had this preconceived notion of being business, being more of a ball buster, maybe something like that. But once she embraced her qualities, then she really started to flourish. And, you know, from outside looking in, I always thought she was that. That's what I got from her. But to actually, as she had said, become aware that that's what you are so that you can, you know, stop acting small is what she said. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've done that in my life too. You know, I just briefly mentioned to her, you know, I think on the podcast that I embraced myself as a marketing person. That was a very, you know, and that wasn't until I was at the Chopra Center, but I've been, you know, when you're self-employed, you have to market yourself. And to this day, I know I'm a good marketing person, but I don't look at it as marketing. I look at it as sharing what I love. Like anything, I can't market something that I don't love. But yeah. If I love something, I love sharing it with people. Like I was even thinking in the podcast when she was talking, 20 people that I wanted to share the talk with, because she does have that business background. And I do know a lot of business people, and I can tend to be pretty woo-woo, you know, and she's like that corporate, you know, yeah. and has that language and that, and kind of that, you know, sensitivity to the different personalities and what they can, you know, what they were the best language for them to open up to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's, I related to her, very much so on that, when you start looking at your strength, or, you know, in her case, it was harmony. That actually was also a trigger for me, because, and I was laughing at myself because I think one of the things that I am very good at is listening, you know, and it's like maybe my superpower is just being a really good listener. And that, you know, I have had that feeling with her of like, well, that's nothing. You know, what is that? What is that going to do for you? And, you know, what good is, how is that going to be a strength, you know, in time? But I think recently I'm coming into that, the space of that, and realizing how it's not something that you have to have to do something, to achieve something. That ability that she has to, you know, to have harmony doesn't have to be something that gains her anything. If that's what you have in life and that's what is your strength, I think you change your relationship to that. And we also talked about that with masculine and feminine energies, is adjusting to and reorienting the value systems of what is a strength. And there are so many, in so many different categories, in those hard and soft strengths. And so I related to her experience when she was like, oh, great, I do things in harmony. I'm like, oh, I'm a great listener, you know, as a 235 pound male hippie, you know, I've had struggles with that. It's like, well, what good is that going to do? Likewise, as you know, I've had imbalance in that too, because it's like, oh, I'm an empath. I listen very well. So I'm just going to listen to everything and everybody's stuff. And then that becomes imbalanced when you don't know when to stop listening. And she talked about that too, is like, yes, I want to lead harmoniously, and but I also had to learn to be like, no, this is the direction we're going. And so it is a relationship that you develop with yourself in that self inquiry and in that self awareness. And it is like she described, where you're in that glass, the mirror house, and you bump into yourself, you know, so often. I related, really, that was such a keen concept that she talked about. I also just realized that I said keen twice, and I don't know that I've ever used keen in a conversation ever, but whatever. It's peachy keen, man. So I thought that was a really good metaphor for that experience. And as we've kind of been talking about with Aleia, sorry, to let's just package this up in a Christmas present, and just being gentle with that process of knowing yourself, becoming aware of yourself. And it's obtuse. It's like learning to walk again, you know, but like she said, you're walking and looking at yourself at the same time. And it's just a lot of stumbling, but that's okay.
Yeah. And then also the mirrors too, you can use, because you bump into yourself in other people.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you're constantly bumping into yourself.
Yeah.
And once you get that, it's very profound unfolding from there.
Yeah. That is a humbling shift, because you're not looking at that person as that person anymore. Separate, you know. You're really tuned into, you know, where she talked about that the net, that gravity of love and that space of compassion where we all reside. You start recognizing yourself and others and others in you. You start doing that, and now you're settling into that net, and that's a humbling shift. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, we're all on this journey together, and we're all these separate, seemingly separate individuals having this separate experience and different experiences. But man, the older I get, the more I see everybody's really going through the same things. You see, you know, as a body worker, I used to see people would have like a crick in their left side of their neck for like 4 weeks, like everybody had a crick in the left side. And I used to think you could get a virus in your neck. That's what I thought, because it would be, you know, and now, you know, of course, after, you know, coming out of COVID and everything, it's like there are a lot of people who, a lot of anxiety out there. There's a lot of anxiety and performance, and people had some quiet time and knew that they wanted to live their life differently, maybe work from home or work less or whatever it is, but now they're being thrown back into things and they want to change the way they're living, but they don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's anxiety about not knowing. And then there's anxiety of the self-awareness that I don't know. And then there's an anxiety of I don't know where to, and it just, if you don't have that gentleness along with that self-awareness, it devolves real quickly, and it is, and it manifests in the body, and it keeps manifesting in the body. It's a strange thing. I want to share this with you. We hadn't talked about this yet, but I had a conversation, a one-on-one with Aleia on Thursday last week, and it went as you could imagine it went. You know, how do I put this? You can't hide. but also nothing can hide. Even the things you don't know about can't hide in those conversations. And there was I was present, and there wasn't, I went there with like, I don't really have questions. There's not a seekingness in me right now. I don't, or at least there's not a drive to be a seeker or a drive to seeking things. And so then towards, you know, three quarters into the conversation, she did the, well, let's check that out. And man, it was wild. And it was funny because I was like stunned, not stunned in the way I have been, but like stunned awareness. There was a stunning awareness. And what she did was, she touched on something and said, well, let's go deeper into that. And my body went hot. It was, you know, when you get nauseous, like when you have food poisoning and you get that like nauseous heat, it was on in like a second, and I got clammy, And there was something there, you know, there was a personal, I described it as a veneer, like a film. There was like a saran wrap film over this. And it was regarding the comfortability of having a spiritual conversation. And there was a shame or a hiding, or should I be talking about this? That was the trigger point for it. And it felt like the saran wrap. But man, my body was like heat, just so much heat coming out. And that was profound, because she, in the beginning of the conversation, she went into, you know, there's always an uncovering. And she talked about Adi Ashanti, you know, even when he, for years and years and years, there's always an uncovering. And there's things that are deeper and deeper and deeper still. And the way they come out and the way they're uncovered is, you know, it's just, there's more to uncover. And so then that happened at the end of it. And I, by the end of it, I was just like, I think I'm done right now. That's all I could say is like, I don't have anything right now. She's like, you're cooked, huh? And I go, I'm cooked. That was just it. But it's to your point of, you know, how not to compare or even say I've done a spiritual seeking for years or whatever, but I have been in a spiritual awakening experience. And getting to a platform or a space where you feel like I don't have any questions that are coming up, or I don't even have a questioning that is driving, and then to have that experience immediately after is just wow. It's whoa, you know, because then you just sink even further, and there's just more uncovering, and that's more words than need to be say about that. So yes, the physical embodiment of that experience, the emotional experience, the spiritual experience of that really does come through the body. That was probably one of the top three profound experiences like that, where it was obvious. There was no other reason why that was causing that physical reaction.
And that happens to people in meditation and in yoga more commonly than in a non-dual conversation, but it would make sense that it would happen. It's a nadi, it's a block in the information highway that gets blasted open, and usually it can come through with people shaking, with sweating, with tears, you know. Even that's a, you know, when Sarah talked about crying her first yoga class, mm-hmm. that's what that is. It's the heart opening up and presence really being embodied and felt fully.
Yeah And it's Alea described it as like a knot.
Yeah, nadi is a knot.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, cool.
Yeah, a nadi is a knot. It's because we have these nadis, N-A-D-I is a Sanskrit word, these nadis, these information highways through the body. There's like millions and millions of them, and there's like little roadblocks in emotional. And then so when you break through them in yoga meditation or a non-dual conversation or whatever yoga, first yoga class, it's like a blasting through of the knot of the stuckness.
Yeah. And it's real subtle. It's so subtle that it was on. I mean, if it was, I was oblivious to that, you know. And you know, Sarah kind of alluded to a couple experiences with where, you know, until she was on that stage, as she described, completely in the wrong place with not even remotely the right background to be where she was, and then having to shamefully walk off there. You know, talk about a physical experience. I'm sure there was that, you know, nervousness, the shaking, you know, I'm sure there's all kinds of things that went along with that. But then, you know, you can cower in that and then never show your face again and kind of, you know, submit to the fear of that, or
which creates the naughty.
Or you can do what she did, is say, I need to be honest with myself. Let me have this conversation with myself and let me realize that I can't do that. I think she described it as I can't be in two different worlds. I either have to commit and do this, you know, practice or not, you know, kind of a thing, and rise to the occasion or rise to that experience, you know, that she had. And I'm no longer disillusioned to think that won't happen X amount of times in the rest of my life. I'm not thinking that won't, but it is still surprising when it does. you know what I mean? It's still fascinating how deep that well is.
Yeah. Yeah. And how it can come out of nowhere too, by just having a conversation. And then she's like, let's go into that more. Let's check that out.
Oh yeah. I think my mistake was I welcomed it. I was very open to it. And she's so gentle. And like, if you feel comfortable, if there's comfort, if this is welcomed, if, you know, all the great language about that, and that it really is disarming, you know, in a good way to be like, no, I'm not uncomfortable. Well, I am uncomfortable, but I'm not unwilling. You know, there's not an unwillingness. And she at the end of it was so funny. She's like, you know, so this is a lot of times where people don't have more conversations with me in the future. You know, it's like, that would be normal. I'm like, no, it's not like that. It's a curiosity, you know, and that's, I resonated with Sarah's curiosity I'll say yes to this because I'm curious what lies beyond that. Yes. I mean, there's a deep curiosity for sure. But it's funny. It's a funny experience.
I'm so glad you did a session with her.
Yeah.
One-on-one. I mean, that makes me very, very, very happy. And, you know, I don't know if she told you, she's got, you know, the reason I don't go on her Wednesday night, she's got a satsang, and, you know, Colleen's usually there and many other people. And, well, not many, I think there's like sometimes 10 or 15 at the most, but sometimes 8. And she does a satsang where she is just more people, but doing the same thing, not recorded or anything, every Wednesday night. I think it's at 7. I can never do it because I've got yoga every Wednesday night. So, but the one-on-one is amazing.
I think I'll do, I'm drawn to do more of those. I get the invite to the satsangs and,
you do. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't go into it. I think in the past there was, I don't know, maybe I did teacher jumping or, you know, I was into this thinking that was going to lead me to this or that. This was really a very neutral gravity of like, hey, I think I need to have a conversation with you. I'm drawn to have a conversation with you. And that was the basis of it. She, of course, you know, we're very open and welcome to that. And then we, you know, we kind of teased about that too. She's like, so there isn't any questioning. And I'm like, well, and that's a hard thing to put on. It's, I'm open to questioning, but I'm not attached to questioning. As you know, I have been the intellectual questioning is not there. It arises, but you know, as a driving force, I'm not in this place of how do I find more spiritual openness? How do I seek more? That's not the drive behind it. It's just, here's the thing, go do. And that's been manifesting in really strange ways in my life too. So, you know, on top of all that, but yeah, it's different landscape right now. It's a different landscape. It's an interesting landscape.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited that you're at where you're at right now. You know, I love that you had shared with me that there doesn't seem to be a seeker, you know, nothing is seeking. And I can't remember when that stopped for me. I can't remember when it did, but I can remember when the seeking was voracious.
Yeah.
And then now it's been more for many, many years now. It's been just I'm living life and I'm curious. It's not that I don't have any questions. I have many people that I go to for guidance, you know, Alea being one of them and you being another one and, you know, many, many people in my life, but just as it comes up, but this gnawing that used to be there, this longing. I listened to a Tim Ferriss podcast today. It was really good about this woman named Susan Cain. Did you hear it?
No, that longing, that's a good word.
Yeah, she wrote a book called The Longing, What Longing Does to Us. And she talked about the longing is really what is the precipice for creativity, you know, in all different forms. We don't usually create out of a fullness and a joy, although that can happen too. We create out of a longing. Like that's why I kind of haven't written any songs or even journaled in years, because that longing that was so deep in me for so long is no longer there.
Yeah. And that seems like it should be sad, but it's not. It's actually really wonderful. And it's free.
It's a relief. It's a relief.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that was, as you were saying, that what there's more of a part. I feel like there's more of a participation in life in this new landscape instead of interacting at a distance. And that's where I think, you know, the intellectual was running the show. The observer, the seeker was watching it and, you know, putting it all together. And I think mm-hmm. these few conversations that we've had with Alea where it's, well, no, let's not intellectualize that. Let's feel into that. It's like somebody pulling you back into
presence,
reality. Yeah, presence, you know, this, but what's really here, you know, and because I've been observing that relationship right now, because you can have presence as the observer, as the witness. It seems like you're present because you're watching it happen, right? From this, you're not at the mercy completely of programming. You're witnessing how that is interacting. You're learning yourself, inquiring. And that was, I think, a space I was living in, not knowing I was living in that space. And there has been this gravity of a pull into the present moment more, a participation, and really feeling into reality. And that's why I think I feel there's so much timelessness right now. It's just so about what's happening right now that there is no cause or concern for everything else that's happening. And so that gravity is really, you know, in a way fucking with things, but also it's kind of doing what you're talking about, where there's so much richness now in life that there's no longing to do or create or achieve, or that seems so small compared to what's really happening right now. It's an afterthought now more than it ever was. But then there's, you know, in my line of work, there's still an interaction with people that have that longing, that are in that creative process that you're talking about. So you see that, right? You're it's obvious that's happening in that person, and you're just there to experience it with them, unattached and, you know, totally abiding to whatever that moment begs of you. It's wild, man. It's wild.
Mm. And Sarah, I think, you know, she touched on that. You know, she called it self-awareness and mindfulness and being that observer, which Deepak used to teach, you know, early on. It was like there's this observer within you. You know, it's almost like stepping away. You're aware that you're thinking. And we talk about it in slightly different language, but she was talking about the same thing. Well, you know, and there is a distinction. There is no observer in there. Observing is just happening.
Yeah.
But you can't tell that to a lot of people because they don't get it. They don't relate to it. I even remember the first time one of my teachers told me that, Corinne, there's no observer in there. There's no witness in there. There's just observing happening. And when he told me that, I'm like, I intellectually kind of get that, but that's not my experience right now. There's an observer in there. Right. And now there's absolutely no observer looking through my eyes. Observing is just happening.
Yeah. And that's a great way to put kind of what I was talking about. I was residing in that, being as the observer and not the observing happening. And it's so subtle.
Subtle and yet profound.
Right. But yeah, when that, and that's why I think it was, you know, so many of those conversations we had with Alea, where it was just like this I glitched out, right? Because it's like, I don't know what's happening. And that's why it's a really, really deep thing to start feeling in and feeling into the present moment and being in that present moment. There is still witnessing happening, right? There's still observing happening. But there's not an I or a me or a thing attached to that. It is
there is no witness. There is no observer. Yeah. There is observing happening and there is witnessing happening. But you are where you are. The yes. first experience of that is there is an observer in there. That's the first experience, the witness. When you, after you start meditating or after you start reading and becoming more mindful and self-awareness starts to happen, that's the experience. Oh, there's an observer in there. Fully. And that's totally fine. That's an aspect that usually people
yes.
And that's great. It just usually somehow will shift out of that eventually. At least it did for me.
It's fun.
Yeah, fun journey. Great conversation. Love those Chopra connections.
I know you do. It's just, it's a little trip down memory lane for you, I imagine.
It is, and it's always fun. Like I'm like this with my high school friends too. It's really awesome to know somebody for 20, 25, or 30 years and have that history and see them evolve and grow and see what they see in you evolving and growing. And I definitely got to see where Sarah has grown, you know, into herself more, you know, into this beautiful teacher, you know, wisdom holder, you know, just beautiful to see. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, she was awesome. I really enjoyed that conversation. It went by really quick. So
Dig, we just did an hour with her, which sometimes we go into a little an hour and 10, but it was so beautiful how she closed it out with, you know, there's just love.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that was just a perfect ending. So, yeah. So, all right, honey. Love, ya.
Love you. Love you too. Have a good night.